This is Monocle on Design, Monocle's weekly look at the best in architecture, craft, furniture, and fashion. I'm Nolan Giles. Today, we take an in-depth look at how the fashion industry is rethinking itself. First, we visit Belgium's fashion capital Antwerp to meet a retailer that's championing the circular economy. Then, we speak to respected fashion designer Dorothy Vogel about her new project, Salon Privé. Plus, we hear from Bali, the 169-year-old Swiss shoemaker that is pioneering as a sustainably minded global brand. All that coming up right here on Monocle on Design on Monocle 24. First, we're off to Antwerp. Here on a cobbled square in the city centre, you'll find a grand building that houses a store, restaurant and generous apartment. Called Grandmark 13, the establishment is renowned for its strong sustainability principles and stocking quality, independent fashion brands. Monocle's Nick Manise sat down with its co-founder, Ilse Cornelissens, to find out how and why the shop puts sustainable fashion at its core.
I kind of think that you could call Antwerp also a little bit a slow city. And I think the world is very much about being more fast and faster every time. And Antwerp is maybe a bit of a sort of exception that is always keeping the quiet and always, well, very much focused on quality. Even the big names that come from here, like architects or fashion designers, they all stayed in Antwerp because they have this, it's this easy way of living in a way. People have space, people try to have time. So I think it's a different mindset here, and that's maybe why I always say that Grandmark 13 also became what it is because we are based in Antwerp. I think this town gave us the opportunity to create a store like we have now that is not that much into trends, but more into quality.
On that, I guess, store and that space and that community that you've built up, I understand you do buyback events twice per year. Could you maybe run us through that and what they are?
Almost 5 years ago, we decided to never do any item on sale in our store anymore. We decided to do that because already at that time, even before we even knew about Corona hitting the world, there was so many written about the negative things that is happening because we put everything on sale too early. If you buy and put your stuff on sale 2 months later, it's just unrespectful to everyone in the chain, from the raw material until the end consumer. It just doesn't really make sense. There's no respect for the piece that is created. And that's when we decided to really say, like, we're going to do it differently and we're just going to stop putting things on sale, which will make our store more sustainable. Because with our restaurant, we were always focusing on no waste. And we were just questioning ourselves and asking ourselves, how no waste can we call our store? And that was a moment that we also decided to stop with the bigger brands, because it's, of course, very difficult to compete with others that put things on sale, and especially with bigger brands, that would make it more difficult. Then we asked ourselves, like, if we're going to do this, maybe our clients won't understand what we are doing, because maybe we are doing something very out of the box, and people might not understand why we would never do anything on sale. And then we started thinking about a concept to really evolve our clients into what we were doing. And then we came up with this secondhand clientele. What we do, we ask our clients to bring in their old clothes and we will resell them in one weekend. So we do it once a season. We organize this reselling event and we empty the full store to put in only secondhand clothing of our clients. And for what they sell, they will receive a voucher that they can spend in our store.
Brilliant. So they get the opportunity to come back again with that voucher to purchase something new that they can then maybe even sell in a few years at another buyback event.
Yeah, actually they can. And actually, it also happens. We really see what goes around comes around. We really see things coming back after like a year and going to someone else. So we try to really make them realize that we have so many things in our closet and we have so many things that are actually beautiful. But of course, we all have a little bit too much, so we won't wear everything. And it's actually really nice because when you put a beautiful dress back in our store, you give it again this beautiful environment. It's not like an outlet full packed with clothing. You really give it again some kind of stage to be found by someone else. So it's a very fun event and it makes people happy. And that's what I really love about doing this, is that from the people that sell their clothing or the people that find a little treasure for themselves for a good price, it really makes people happy. And when we did sales months, people actually were never happy because they were always having the idea that, okay, next week it will be more on sale, and it's a different mindset. So what we really realized after doing this, that it's a much more positive way of having cheaper things in our store.
Equally as well, you know, if people are selling things again a few years later, if the items aren't so trend based and they're more about quality and the craftsmanship and the make of them, does that help with the actual longevity and the ability to be able to sell them again?
Yes and no, because of course, like we all know, fashion also needs a bit of fun and a bit of boldness in it, and sometimes maybe the more bold pieces are the pieces that you don't wear every day and are maybe also the pieces that you say goodbye to after a while. So I think for the secondhand sale, it's also a way to maybe resell more fashionable pieces. So I think like the best quality cashmere jumper that you are wearing, you would maybe even never say goodbye to.
No, I think that makes sense. And then I guess more broadly as well, branching out beyond these buyback events, what other efforts are you making, I guess, to make Grand Marque 13 more circular and more sustainably minded?
Yes. Yeah, I think for us, the most important realization was that if we want to be more sustainable, we should buy less ourselves and make our clients also buy less and just think more before you buy. This was really a way for us to buy ourselves less, and it really works. So we kind of make the same margin in the end with buying a lot less. And if I realize how much less we ask the world to produce for us, I'm very happy that after a few years, we can really say that it works and that it's really a good way of consuming differently and also helping people to think differently and to do it differently.
You mentioned there you've sort of been doing this for a few years now. I'm sure you've learned a lot along the way. Just as perhaps a parting piece of advice, what would you say to, you know, other clothing brands who might be perhaps hesitant to go in this direction where they're almost, it seems counterintuitively, encouraging customers to buy less? What would be your advice for someone starting on this journey to perhaps make their store or their fashion label a bit more circular and sustainable?
Well, I think there's a few ways to do that. As a brand, I think it's very important that you push also from your side, because you're always kind of pushed in a way by the retailers, and maybe a retailer would feel the other way around. I think it's very important that brands and stores will go into a world where they start selling warm things in winter and colder things in summer, and then really give it the full season the chance to be sold. So I think as a brand, I think it's also important to make your own rules and to, when you sell and you deliver a coat, for example, around this period, it would be a bit weird to put it on sale on Black Friday, you know? So I think you have to set your rules and communicate this very well with your retailers. And if they don't want to join your rules, then just don't work with them. I think it's very important to make sure that what we produce and what we make and what we all put our efforts for, that we give it enough time to be sold.
My thanks to Ilse Cornelissens there, speaking to Monocle's Nick Manise. Now, let's catch up with Monocle's Maylee Evans for this week's key design events and releases that you can't miss.
Thanks, Nolan. First, we're launching an expedition to Antarctica, where a new master plan has been unveiled for the modernisation of Australia's Davis Research Station. Led by Hugh Broughton Architects, the project will reconcile state-of-the-art research facilities with the weather conditions, isolation and resource accessibility challenges of the southern continent. First established in 1957, Davis currently has accommodation for scientists, an operations and administration centre, as well as a 360-degree observatory deck. New buildings will be a series of elevated aerodynamic modules to ensure flexibility and ease of maintenance and expansion. To Stockholm now, where after spending more than 6 years perfecting the visual identity of Scandinavian Airlines, design agency Bold has introduced Cube, a compact and minimal box that redefines in-flight meals on short-haul routes. Cube's smart design will save up to 51 tonnes of plastic a year by foregoing the use of multiple containers and introducing plant-based cutlery. Its minimal form, which is in keeping with Bold's recent update of the airline's livery, uses sections of the SAS logo to distinguish meals, featuring softer details for hot food and sharper lines for cold servings. Next, we're off to Paris, where Karl Lagerfeld's label is collaborating with the late designer's famous muse, the supermodel and activist Amber Valletta. The pair are co-developing an eco-friendly accessories collection that features reusable water bottles, zip wallets, and wash bags. Of particular note is the collection's K-cushion bag, inspired by the tailor-made cushion that Lagerfeld carried on his travels. Due for release early next year, it will be available in two eco-friendly material options and crafted with minimal ecological impact. And finally, to the US, where Design Miami is in full swing. For its 16th edition, the fair will supplement its regular program with a new curated exhibition series. Cool Podium, this program includes design and craft items that will be displayed and later made available for purchase. In a tempestuous year for the design industry and community alike, and for the US as a whole, Podium will highlight pieces that question what it means to be American. Expect to see everything from Navajo tribal textiles to ceramics by Puerto Rican potters. That's all from me this week. Back to you, Nolan.
Thanks, Maylee. For more, subscribe to our Monocle on Design newsletter, which hits inboxes every Wednesday. Now from our studio here in Zurich, where earlier this month I met luxury fashion designer Dorothy Vogel, whose direct-to-consumer showroom Salon Privé and personal styling services are offering a new perspective on the industry's tired business models. Dorothy explained to me a little more about the concept and which staples we should be keeping in our wardrobe.
I started in 1986 here in Zurich with my own label called Annex. I did normal collections and I sold them to boutiques all over the world. Then I started to do this new selling concept, Salon Privé. I do a normal prototype collection. The difference is that I have into this prototype collection all the sizes. Normally you have only one size, 36 maybe. When I open my pop-up store, the customers arrive, then they can try on everything and then I see how it fits and if it's necessary I can do the adjustments. I'm also a pattern maker. I do the patterns. I know how I have to maybe to adjust a piece they have. Maybe the shoulder should be smaller like this. The fabrics I choose, they are normally from Italy, very nice quality. And here the production in Switzerland, I work together with this production since I started. And they grew with me also in the terms of how they sew pieces. But it's not really easy here in Switzerland because production is very high priced. I have to travel a lot. For example, I'm doing a double face coats, then I have to go to Italy to have a look how it's made and to do adjustments and go forth and back. It's 1 hour from Zurich, and so I'm really free to go do the best for the clients. When I do a pop-up store, maybe, then it's like a boutique. They come in, have a look. I'm always there, you know, because I know the customers, or I have the feeling for new customers, how far I can go to show them new pieces. I think from my point of view that this blouse, for example, could be good for you. And so they trust me and they start to try on. It's always very, very important, the first contact with the client, and that I can bring them into the cabin to try on. And then they have the feeling how the fit is and how the feeling is comfortable for them. And then they start to trust. There are a lot of women, they have a lot of clothes, but are in front of her wardrobe in the morning and think, oh, I have so much pieces, but which piece shall I choose for this morning? That's one of the service that I check first the whole wardrobe with them. We try on, we look for the fit and for the style, if the style is still good for them now. And then we divide the pieces. And from this point on, I put together the looks. I do the styling for them. We do also pictures, and afterwards I note on the pictures red blouse with black trouser or so, and then they can take out this lookbook in the morning and say, ah, today it's a sunny day, I take this flower dress. They also learn to see themselves. When I try on everything with them, they start to know maybe they have very good labels bought for the wardrobe, but maybe nobody told them that the sleeves are too long, for example, and you can wear a really good style, but when the sleeves are too long, you feel that is not right. When I say, look, this, the leg is too long, then they start to recognize it also when they are alone. Because my network, I have some secondhand stores, for example, which I could propose that they connect with, and so they can give there the clothes, and so it's not throwing away, not waste. The pieces you have as a basics, they have to fit really good on the body. That's important. Then you can all the time a little bit play with leisure blouses or so, but then you have a shape. Good t-shirt, a white one, it's the jeans, it's a good fitted trouser, small, and maybe for the fashion, a large leg, and then a blazer and a white shirt. One thing is also important, it's the fabric quality, because mostly cheaper fabrics are not so well woven. That means the weight of the fabrics is in French légère. This is not too good for the body. My archive is like my wardrobe. I'm really free and I'm really spontaneous. I never created collections with a theme. When I do new styles, then I add this to my archive I already had. Also the customers, when they buy a new style, they can all the time combine it with styles they already have in their wardrobe.
My thanks to Dorothy Vogel, speaking to us there from Zurich. Now to Caslano, a small village in the canton of Ticino, where global Swiss fashion and accessories brand Bally is based. With almost 170 years of shoemaking experience, the brand is famed for both its formal footwear and mountaineering boots. I spoke with CEO Nicola Garotto and began by asking him about the brand's new sustainability initiative, Bally Peak Outlook Foundation.
The foundation was launched in 2019. With an inaugural cleanup of Mount Everest, removing 2 tons of waste from the base camp all the way up to the summit. So this is a long-term commitment that was born out of the company's deeply rooted alpine origins, pioneering legacy. As you may know, in the early 1900s, Bally supported many Swiss expedition teams during climbs of the highest peaks in Himalaya's regions, Andes, and obviously in the Alps region, by supplying these crews with bespoke technical footwear. And it was during one of these expeditions that Sherpa Tenzin Norgay received the now famous Bally reindeer boots, which he wore during the first successful summit of the Mount Everest. Bally continues a long-standing relationship with the Tenzing son, Jamling, and the Norgay family. And it was through Jamling that we were first alerted. And this initiative, this is a long-term commitment. And we decided to transform this into a foundation to demonstrate our long-term commitment to the mountains, to our alpine origins. And what is important to keep in mind is that the Bally Peak Outlook Foundation is a concrete example of what the brand is doing. This is a catalyst. But the hard work on sustainability and where we will make the most impact is on the broader commitment of the brand to improve its footprint. Because now there is an awareness that we all have as an industry. And we know that the fashion industry is one of the most polluting industry. We know, for instance, that 10% of CO2 emissions are linked to the fashion industry. And if we do nothing, by 2030, they will represent 50%. I have been shocked when I learned that the fashion industry CO2 emissions were superior to the combined emissions of international flights and maritime traffic. It is mandatory for us to do something, and we have this awareness, and we must act upon that.
You are a large global player. You're dealing with many different markets. Could you maybe just take us through some of the kind of the key concrete steps that are part of this roadmap that are really, I guess, creating change within your company? You're actively having to evolve the way that you're working and manufacturing to meet up to these kind of ambitious goals that you have.
Last year, we went under an independent baseline. And this was a starting point to understand where we are. It's simply giving ourselves and identify goals, short, medium-term, and long-term goals, across 4 pillars. The first one being transparency. And I think this is critical to holding us accountable, so walk the talk. The second is quality. I believe that timeless products are the essence of sustainable luxury. So it's all about delivering the best possible products to our customer, ensuring responsibility across the supply chain. So in our sustainability roadmap, improving quality is something that is deeply rooted to the DNA of Bali, that is a brand of craftsmanship and quality. We were born, as you know, in 1951 as a shoemaker in Switzerland, and we are still a shoemaker, a Swiss shoemaker. I take the opportunity to say we continue more than 25% of our production is still made here in Switzerland, where I am right now in Caslano in Lugano region. So quality is the essence of the brand. The next pillar of our sustainability roadmap is collaboration. I was mentioning that 25% of our production is done internally in our own factory, meaning that 75% is done with partners, and we need to ensure that we work in the best way with the best practices, and that the quality standards, the ethic that Bali has, is widespread across our supply chain and our partners. The final pillar is progress, and through innovation, I'm convinced that innovation is part of the solution to the issue that we have as far as environmental and climate crisis is concerned. Through innovation, and there is a long story of innovation in Bali, industrial innovation, product innovation, design innovation, but also social innovation. Bali is known to have launched welfare programs in Switzerland. And I think that innovation is still extremely relevant to today's challenges that we have. AI, artificial intelligence, can help to improve the accuracy in planning the production and hence to decrease the leftover and the waste. This is an example where innovation and the progress can help to reduce the footprint of brands in the fashion industry. With thanks to 3D prototyping, you can create an infinity of declination of derivations of a single style. So it can really help the designers on the one side provide solutions to decrease our footprint, on the other side also helps the designer to have a variety of declination of the product that they are designing.
I think we should give a little bit of time to the capsule collection, the Bali Peak Outlook capsule collection. These are beautifully designed pieces. And like you mentioned before, I guess quality is such a hallmark of your brand. People really come to it because they know it's hard wearing and timeless in design. So perhaps you could take us through this particular collection and let us know, you know, what sets it apart.
And the objective of this collection is to finance the future initiatives of the Bali Peak Outlook Foundation. The team has designed a collection that is made of shoes, accessories, but also ready to wear. These are very nice outdoor pieces, but designed to be worn in the city. And 100% of the proceeds of this collection will be given to the foundation. The Bali Peak Outlook Foundation, this is a long-term commitment. We have started with the Everest, but we will extend our commitment to sister mountains. We will also partnering with rangers in the Kilimanjaro region to create new tracks to access more easily from the villages to the Kilimanjaro summit and to make the life easier of this community. So we are born in the Alps in Switzerland, so we feel this commitment to the preservation of the mountain environment.
So in terms of Bali as a brand, you know, it's a brand that's so rich with heritage, and often people do view it through a lens of reliability and quality and always being a company that's designing things well because of this history in the mountains and for performance, I guess, as much as it is for looking good. So I'm really interested to hear, you know, how you're taking these ideas forward, because all of these ideas that we have discussed are pretty forward thinking around, you know, circular design and sustainability and innovating 3D printing and all this kind of thing. Will the brand transform from the outside? Will people view it differently, do you think? Or do you think that the Bali brand will always kind of remain how it is?
This is always a fine line and a balance to find between heritage and being relevant today. We are a brand, a Swiss brand, that was born in 1851. So we are at the same time extremely proud to be Swiss, but we are yet global. We have over 800 points of sales worldwide, including 300 stores and an e-commerce servicing 35 countries. We are an heritage brand and we have a deep heritage in shoemaking. But today, Bali is much more than that. We present a full lifestyle offering from shoes to bags and accessories, as well as ready to wear. Our philosophy is rooted in timeless pieces, in craftsmanship, in contemporary style for modern day. So there is really this synergy between innovation, functionality, and craftsmanship to deliver the best product quality. So, as you say, we are approaching next year our 170 years anniversary. But what is really important is how to be relevant today. And this is what should drive us and what is driving us right now.
That was Bally's Nicola Garotto speaking to us from Ticino. And that's all we have time for on today's show. If you're keen for more design, then catch up with our 5-minute midweek sister show, Monocle on Design Extra. It airs every Thursday. Today's show was produced and edited by Maylie Evans. Thanks to our researchers, Nick Manise and Charlie Filmer-Court. I'm Nolan Giles. Thank you very much for listening and goodbye.